Welcome to the podcast From Depression to Expression. I'm your host, Oliver Schirach. I have struggled for many years with low energy, self-worth, and depression, which have hindered me to truly live my life and express the beauty that is within me. To help myself, I started to learn a lot of things. After many years, I feel ready to share what I've learned with you. You're at the right place if you want to find out more about what is depression, what can cause it, and how to get out of it again. It's either for you or for someone you know. We will be going out into realms that are not yet accepted by mainstream. We will be talking about the effects of food on your emotions, being unaware of your emotions, shadow work, triggers, soul retrieval, awakening, dark night of the soul, near-death experiences, and much more. Some of those shows would be just me talking about things that are on my heart and what I learned lately. Other shows are with guests from around the world, which will share their knowledge with us and broaden our horizons. Those guests can be scientists, shamans, medicine men or women, therapists, personal coaches, and of course people that went through depression themselves and sharing their experience, what they learned by finding out who they are. Follow me on this journey to learn more about how to overcome depression. Learn to accept and love yourself truly, so we can embrace our authentic self unapologetically and start expressing who we are without fear, but with joy and lightness. Please remember to like and subscribe to never miss an episode, and share this episode with someone you know that needs to hear this information. So without any further ado, let's get into today's show. There we go. We are recording. I'm here. This is Oliver. And on the other side is Mr. Meaningful Work, Tim. And yeah, Olori.
Exactly.
You did got I get it? It?
You oh, got
my,
it.
My goodness. And you're not Irish.
I'm not Irish. All yeah. Contrary to popular belief, I am not Irish.
We got that one in our last talk. So we connected over LinkedIn because there was some great content I do not remember if you posted or you answered on it. And that was about authenticity and, you know, being an authentic father. And so we had a longer talk on the weekend. Yeah. And I think like, wow, this guy is sweating while I'm freezing.
All this shiny, you know, for us that are bald, everything that shows on the top. So,
yeah. I mean, I try to grow a beard, but it's not so thick because on top it's not working that well anymore.
Yeah, you got to compensate in these other areas. So, but yes. We connected on LinkedIn.
Yes, on authenticity. And then we realized there's actually much more. And so let's get started for the people to get to know you. So you missed the meaningful work. We will get into that. Why you're doing that. And that's also one of the parts why you fit so good into the series, I think. So if you would have to describe yourself with three words, what kind of words or headlines are those?
Headlines.
Or however you want to call it.
I'll say how folks have described me versus me describing myself. I have been described as very energetic, engaging, and very positive. So positive, energetic, and engaging, I think would be the three words that I have been described.
And how would you describe yourself?
How would I describe myself? I would probably agree with those. And I am also, I guess I'm very resilient. I'm a hustler. I don't mind eating shit to be able to get what needs to be done. And so, Yeah, I would say hustler, positive, and I'm a storyteller. I love telling stories, love bringing stories to life. So I guess those would be my three things: energetic, hustler, storyteller.
Okay, so that's like a lot. Energetic, I can see you have this smile and and also the talk we had, but that's probably also because you're in Florida, right?
California.
California, sorry. Yeah. I knew it. I'm going to blow it.
The West Coast, Florida. That's what it is. Florida is the East Coast of the United States. Florida is like the East Coast, California. And California is the West Coast, Florida. So you're kind of right. Sunshine State.
Yeah, sunshine. I knew I'm going. I was like thinking, like, did he say Florida? Yeah, I'm just going to mix it up. I'm sure.
Hey, no worries. You were close. By way of climate, you were close.
Yeah, exactly. You were talking about how hot it is while we have snowstorm. Yeah. It's the 1st of December, the first time I actually, since I'm in Denmark, see snowstorm. It's beautiful. And it's actually not just a little tiny bit. It's a few fingers.
Yeah, yeah. So, it came all the way down. Full commit.
That's what we do today anyway. Yeah. So energetic. How comes now that you look energetic, but are you just like the party guy all the time? Are you pulling the people with you? Are you just like continuing? Has that a part with hustling, right? So you don't give up. Is that the energetic part as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the energy is, I get energy from people. So I am a connector. And so anytime that I have an opportunity to connect with large groups of people, with small groups of people, it really energizes me. I love learning about folks. I usually try to skip the small talk. Normally when folks meet with other people, there's the very basic, you know, what do you do? Where do you work? You know, those types of things. I don't like having that type of small talk. I like going deep right away. And so one of the things I like asking folks is, what are you famous for? And it causes folks to think about, you know, what am I famous for? What is something that people know me for? So maybe it's tacos, maybe it's salsa dancing, maybe it's, I don't know what it is, but it really gets the conversation started. And I love those types of conversations. It energizes me. And I just like making people laugh, making people smile. And so that's where I get my energy. And then just hustling, I mean, you need people to make business work or to bring your ideas to life. And so I want to call it a curse, but more of a blessing. Like, I'm constantly swimming in different ideas. And the only way to bring those ideas to life is to communicate them and to connect with people and see if there's alignment. So that's part of the hustle and the energy and where they meet.
Also, storytelling was just popping
and
up.
And storytelling. Yeah. Yeah.
Because you have to, you connect with people, you communicate with people, you work and you sell your ideas. So to continue, and for doing that, you tell stories. Is there another storytelling part besides, you know, getting your ideas across?
Yeah. I mean, officially I tell stories, or I go to church and I tell Bible stories in a very energetic way. I also use some of those Bible stories to talk about business principles and business concepts. So I've spoken to leaders in organization using some of those stories. I try to bring it into modern day terms. I'm very animated with my body and with sounds. I do sound effects. I do different accents and voices and jumping and rolling around. And so I really try to bring the story to life. So I do children's stories and I do leadership stories as well.
Okay, so you're a full embodied storyteller, so to speak.
I'm a fully animated. You get
fully audio, animated.
Yeah, you got the audio, you got the visual, you get, you know, all senses.
Yeah, so I'm not going to call this podcast episode the fully animated storyteller.
you only have so many characters to put in your title, but
Make them pretty long, actually. But people get lost, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a too long title.
When you see the dot, dot, dot that you said, see more. Yeah, there's like, oh, man, this is going on forever. So keep it short and simple.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking for people, guests, which have short names, so I have a longer title.
Oh, there you go. Exactly. Tim, I fit right in. That's one of the prerequisites to get on your show. Short names, please. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's, so I can have,
or change your name. Go to the government and officially change your name if you want to be, if you want to be on Oliver's show.
So the question is now, I mean, the person coming to my attention is Tim Ferriss. That's basically why I started or wanted to make a podcast, because he was doing it in a different way than many others, right? Yeah. I'm like, hey, if he can do it and is successful, this is cool. Like uncut, raw, talking to people, no special effects, just be there. Like, you know, like
it's you're a
just
conversation. Sitting here.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, he really started that in 2013. Yeah. Now it's kind of like a common thing, but back then when I listened to podcasts, it wasn't really. Mm-hmm. So his name is Timothy. So, but you know, everyone knows him, Tim. So what is your name? Is it really Tim or is it something much more?
So the only people that call me Timothy is the motor vehicle department, if I'm going to get my registration changed, and old ladies at church. So those are the only people that call me Timothy. Everybody else calls me Tim.
So it is Timothy as well for you.
It is Timothy. Yes. Yeah. That's what it says on my driver's license.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Or when I'm in trouble, when I was a kid and I was in trouble, my mom would call me Timothy. That's the other one.
Yeah, that's kind of the typical one, right? I'm also a father. And
exactly.
When our first daughter was born, we had like Josephine as a name.
Yeah.
Like French. We're in Denmark.
What was the name? Say it again.
Josephine.
Josephine. Okay.
Yeah. Like the French version. Like with PH and all the, you know, the French style.
Yeah.
And in Denmark, they call it Josephine.
Josephine.
Yeah. And they write it with F. Okay. But then she was born and then we looked at her and like, this is not a Josephine.
Isn't that awesome where you can just like look at a baby's face and say, it's that's just not going to fit.
Because Josephine for me is like more like this, you know, princess.
Yeah.
But wasn't that actually this... So Sophie, was that her name? That cartoon princess, Walt Disney princess or something like that?
Yeah.
Sophie or something like that. So, yeah. So we were reading another fantasy book, but the name Avienda was really great. So we actually got it registered and we know someone else got the name, which knows through a friend of us that our daughter is Avienda. And she was so grateful that she could take the name because someone already had it in Denmark.
Nice.
So, but while we were researching, right, you have to prove that this name is not just whatever made up fantasy of yours. So, of course, I could find in America there are like 7 to 10 people a year named Avienda.
Really?
And, but then there was a lot of comments, you know, you get these name pages, right? Like baby names and then get inspiration. What is the meaning of the name, the energy, whatever. And so in some of the comments, I was like, how can you call your daughter Avienda? Because she will be called Avis. And like, what is
Avis?
Yeah, but what is the problem with that? Tell me, you're American. Is there any problem if you call Avis or Avi?
Like A-V-I-S?
Yes.
Well, I mean, we would pronounce it Avis.
Yeah.
And Avis. There's a car rental company called Avis. So
okay. So people will
So I mean, but you'd have to, I mean, that would have to be a stretch. Folks are going to have to be really creative to be like, oh, Avis, are you a car? Like, yeah, there'd have to be a lot of intentionality around that. But Avienda, I love that.
Yeah.
In fact, I would probably, you know, if I had a name like that, I'd have folks call me my full name all the time. It's like, oh, is your name Avi? No, it's Avienda. And they're just going to have to call me Avienda the whole time.
No, but it's, we call her Avi and Avienda. Like,
yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah.
But it's kind of like both. It's we interchange it, I think.
Yeah.
And it works fine. It just came up now with Tim. And this memory from searching the name and getting approved, this was just, it's still lingering there, right? So I had to get it. Now I got the question answered.
Nice.
So now I can get the thought out so it can fly away.
Exactly. You have scratched that itch and all is satisfied.
Yeah, now I can move on and my life is going to be that much more like it.
Your life can go on now.
So I love the introduction questions. Like, I love it because you say you have like these go deep questions right away. So let's see if we ever exchange some. so I can use them on my show.
For sure.
I ask people in the Oliver Scherer show, which was started on creativity, innovation, startups, and then went more into the spiritual mindset world, you know, personal growth, and now I split it up. Mm-hmm. So I ask the people, if you are a new color in a coloring box, you know, what kind of color would you be? Can be just like yellow, red, black, brown, white, green. Can also be something more different. And why would you be that color?
That is a beautiful question. In fact, I'm going to use that tonight with my kids.
Dinner. There you go. You have added a new go deep question for you.
We have a new go deep questions for 4-year-olds and a 6-year-old. So
or your church. Color,
or church. Yeah, that's a good idea. If I was a new color in, like, if there was a way to mix like a cobalt blue with a cobalt blue with a I don't know how to describe it, but like a, it's kind of like a muted orange, right? Not like a very loud orange. So you see this orange here. Well, this kind of looks like red, but
yeah. It's not. Yes, I should know the word because I'm an artist. I've seen it. Yes, that's a special name for it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a burnt, so like a muted orange. So not a very bright orange, but if there's a way to mix like a cobalt blue and a muted orange, that would be the color that so I would kind of be. Like,
it's kind of like
whatever that hue is, whatever that mixture is.
So depending on the light, how you look at it, so it's like these cars which have these two colors, and then when it's passing, it changes.
Yes, exactly. So it can kind of have that. Exactly. So, I mean, the cobalt blue, just because it's kind of a mix of, and when you think of blue, you think cool and calm, but cobalt blue is a very pungent, sharp, bright blue. So I think for me, that mixes that bright attitude with a cool kind of level-headed, very even keel type of personality, and the orange is just warmth, right? You have that warmth, and I like folks to feel warm and engaged, comfortable. When I think of like a muted orange, I think of fall and how folks like to get cozy in the fall, like in autumn, and they get their sweaters, their scarves, and their gloves, and everybody's drinking their pumpkin lattes and, you know, all those things. Like, I just feel like fall, and over here in the US, we just had Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving happens in the fall. So it's just a season of chill and comfort and all that. So I think that kind of meshes my personality and characteristics.
Wow, I'm so glad I asked you this question.
I'm glad you asked me too. I have never, ever, ever thought about that. And hopefully I can get a clip of this because I would love to repurpose this. And share, folks.
Yeah. You will share.
Yeah.
We'll share. But that's beautiful. I actually can see it. But of course, for me, it's this car picture coming or a fish.
No,
Also fish, you have the feeling sometimes they have these.
Anything that can kind of change colors with the light or perspective, I think that's the type of thing that we'd be going for.
Yeah. I see a new logo profile picture for you.
Yeah. A nice cobalt blue and muted orange fish.
Yes, that's there
the
we
new
go.
Face of Mr. Meaningful Work.
That's there we go.
Yeah.
I also like the explanation how these two colors fit together.
Yeah.
So is there next really fun question, and then we can go deep. Then we get serious. do you have any fun facts or a secret not so many people know about you? You know, just your wife knows or your kids.
I don't know how widely I have shared this with folks. I think just in smaller circles, but our family in, so I'm originally from Nigeria. And so our family on my mom's side, there is a town that rotates ruling families. So a family will come and they would be like the chief or the king of that area. And it just kind of rotates through families and generations. And so my mom's grandfather was one of the chiefs in that area. And so if it ever came down, and I'm the oldest of the grandchildren on that side. And so if there was ever a time where it came back to be our turn, our family or myself, if we decided to, could be chiefs or kings or rulers in our little side of Nigeria. So
I just,
I could be a chief one day.
Yeah, and when you say chief, of course, the image coming to me is already like, now you're in America and you have a US citizenship. I just see you with the big feather from the Native Americans.
And it has, I mean, there's a lot of headgear. There's a lot of, you know, flowy clothing. So it would be somewhat similar. So I think that's a fun fact that folks may not be aware of. So I might change my name to Chief.
Chief Tim Olare.
Exactly. Chief Tim Olare. Yeah.
And then we go super international there. Super. Exactly. But I love it. I mean, that's it's continuing where we ended on Sunday. But let's get a little bit back from what we were talking about on Sunday. How... Let's start where we actually connected with the authenticity as a parent.
Right.
Why did you share that? Like that it's so important that you're an authentic father with the kids.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that came up, and I'm trying to remember the post, but I think it was something along the lines of understanding who my kids are individually and who their true and authentic themselves are, and appreciating them and engaging with them in that way. I think as we grow older, we become less and less authentic. I think when you're kids, you are who you are and you just live into that being. If you want to be a Power Ranger or a ninja for that day, like you're a Power Ranger and you're a ninja, and it doesn't matter what other folks think. As you grow older and you start to care what other people think, and you start to adjust based on what your friends are saying, what they're going to make fun of you about, what they're going to celebrate you for, you either start doing, you know, bad and riskier things because it's cool, you start doing less compliant things because it's not cool, and you start changing, or based on what your parents are saying, hey, we want you to do this particular thing or behave in this particular way. I feel what happens is that kids start to become less and less authentic as they grow up. And then adults, you just have these folks that are just faking it to like fit into society or a job or what have you. So knowing that in my research or findings or discovery of meaningful work, that authenticity in a work setting, particularly experiencing meaningfulness in the work that you're doing, authenticity and having permission to be authentic and have like your values is a key factor in experiencing that. But that translates into the home and life as well. It's like, if I can allow for my kids to be their full and authentic.
There we go. So yeah, Zoom just stopped on Tim's side, so we tried to catch up where we stopped.
Yeah. So I was just talking about, you know, what I've found in my journey to discovering meaningful work, and this whole Mr. Meaningful Work journey, was how important authenticity and you having the permission to be your full and authentic self, understand what your values are and give your permission for that, how that factors into meaningfulness at work. But that also translates to life. And so as I allow my kids to be their full and authentic selves, what I start to see is that I start to become, so I learn from them. And as I'm giving them the space and the permission to do it, I start to give myself the space and permission to be full and authentic myself. And I feel like they are able to thrive, right? They're able to thrive in that regard. And when I see them thrive, it makes me happy. And it's just a whole bundle of joy for everybody. So that was, you know, that was, I think, the theme or the intent behind what I had shared on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And from there, we went down many, many ways. Yeah. So let's see if I just want to go without the notes here from Sunday.
Yeah.
So what was the aha moment for you that you realized, whoa, you know, kids are authentic, you know, playing Power Rangers or whatever it is, and they don't care, and making the connection to yourself or to the people around you that, hey, we're not really authentic with ourselves or with our environment, with our, you know, the people around us, and how that is connected with how we grow up, actually, or the parenting style.
Yeah, so there was a very distinct moment, and this actually just happened probably less than 2 months ago. Oh. So my son plays soccer, and so I was taking him to soccer practice, and so that was our thing. Sunday morning, we go to soccer practice, and then after soccer practice and the game, him and I will go and get ice cream, him and I together. So that was our Sunday tradition. So after, I think it was like the second week, we were leaving the soccer field. We were driving the car to go and get ice cream. We had music playing in the car. He was in the back. He had the windows down, and he was just enjoying. It was just a good day. Like, the sun was out, the wind was blowing, his head or hand was out the window. And then he said something. He said, Dad, he said, I'm so glad I'm not a parent.
Oh, wow.
And he said, no. He said, I'm so happy that I'm 5 years old. I said, what? He said, yeah, I'm happy. I'm 5 years old. I'm happy that I'm not a parent. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, being 5 years old is so relaxing. And I was just, I mean, that moment of like just self-awareness of being like where he is. And he saw that I was like visibly like energized by that. I'm like, I turned around and I looked at him like, dude, what are you saying? And he was smiling because he knew he had just said something smart or whatnot. And I lowered the muse and I was like, son, do you know why I'm so surprised by what you just said? And he was like, no. I was like, when I was 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, all I wanted to do was be a grown-up. Like, I had no appreciation for where I was, like, and how good I had it at that time. And the fact that you at 5 years old can just be in the moment and appreciate how relaxing and how fun and how freeing it is to be 5 years old and not be concerned. And you know the stress that parents go through. And he was like, I don't want that right now. I'm happy where I'm at. It was such a breathtaking moment for me. And it just showed me, like, man, if he can realize this at 5 years old, what am I doing? Like, I'm always chasing the next thing. I'm always, you know, trying to please this person, trying to get to that next level, and all these different things. And it may not be who I am necessarily, or authentic to myself, and not allowing me to be present in what I'm doing. And so that was a major realization. And it's definitely going to impact the content. So for the meaningful work things, like, it's going to impact them. Like, hey, if these kids get it and they understand what it means to be present and authentic, how much more can we as adults understand the principles and the importance of being present and authentic?
Yeah, and now that's interlinking a bit on these different paths and different knowledge and beliefs, or, you know, perhaps ideas I have, which I don't know if they're true or wrong or whatever, right? Keep the eyes open, be curious, and because we do not really know what we are, who we are, where we're going, where we come from. If you come from anywhere, there's too many things that say we are not just robots, right? That was not too long ago. Yeah, a few days ago, I think I heard someone say they tried to, you know, the heart is beating, right? Oh, that was Lee Holden, you know, the Qigong guy. I think he's pretty good. When you look for Qigong and in the Western world, you find him. And he said, you know, the scientists, the heart is beating, right? So when you have everything there and you're dead, you can give electric to it. Like you know, the physical everything, but it will not beat. So what is actually making the heart beat in the end, right? It's like you apply the same things as we know from the body, but it will not work. So there's more to actually make our body work, right? So I say that because when you have a five-year-old saying something as profound as that, I come and ask myself, how many lives did that kid have before? Was that some, you know, remembrance of being an adult coming now through his whatever being, through his soul, through whatever there is? And realizing, hey, wow, I just learned something. Right. In my last life, perhaps in his last life, he probably was chasing everything. And now he's just like, whoa. And he just let that bat be, right? So be in the pro, or it's just for you, right? For the parents.
It's a lesson. It's a lesson for us to be able to observe. It was funny. I was with my brother a few weeks after that, and he just asked me these silly questions, like what if questions. He's like, would you rather wake up tomorrow and be 10 years old and know everything that you know today, but it's 10 years, like you're back to when you were 10 years old? Or would you rather wake up in like, and you're 50 or in 50 years and you have like $50 million or something like that? And it just reminded me of, you know, what you're talking about is, you know, if somebody has all these learnings and realizations and they go back to being young, like how would that change your perspective, how you would move through life if you've had all these full experiences and you're like, you know what, I'm going to either keep my trajectory in what I'm doing or change my trajectory in what I'm doing or just be fully present and aware and aware in what I'm doing. If I was able to do it again, from that perspective. But I think to your last point, I think it's for us, I think it's for the parents to take from the innocence of a child who is just expressing what he just realized and, you know, being present and authentic in that moment, that we need to do the same thing and just learn from that.
Yeah, to be more present. I mean, there's so many teachers. You can go to Buddhism, you can go to Jesus, you can go to whatever you want. Zen Buddhism, right? It's one of the big ones to be in the moment, to appreciate. So I haven't really heard something like that from the kids, or I was not aware.
These kids, you know. And I think it's the environment that is created, right? I think if there is an environment that allows for that type of thought expression, where it's welcomed, where it's encouraged, where there's not a lot of, you know, it's just a positive environment where they feel free to be able to think and express in those types of ways, that you'll have more instances like that. Just this morning, I mean, we keep talking about my kid, but just this morning, their grandma gave them $100 each. Gotta love grandmas. Like they're always
$100 like that. Whoa.
Just like that. And so I took it from them. I said, we're going to invest this, right? We're going to take this money. We're going to invest. And they're like, what is invest? And again, I have 4-year-old twin girls and a 6-year-old boy. I said, we're going to invest this. And this is where you put your money in an account and it grows. It collects interest. It picks different companies and it just grows in different ways. And so, you know, your $100 can turn to $150, $200, $300, $1 million. And so I said that, and then they went, they were getting ready for school. And then my son came back and he was like, I'm so happy about what you told me earlier. I said, what do you mean? He said, money. He's like, I'm happy because money is like us. It's like people, because it grows just like we do. who are you? But I think, that cultivating that environment for that also helps folks to be able to be comfortable in authenticity. The environment, I think, also informs or affects the feeling of authenticity in somebody.
Yeah, but that's actually, I just ponder on this idea. Money is growing like people. But if you have that mindset, you will not be afraid of investing money. You will not be afraid of using money in different ways. Yeah. I grew up with be careful, use the money wisely, don't just waste it. And look where I am for the last 10 years. I'm just looked at stuff. I'm like, okay, 10 years ago, I bought a iMac, the biggest iMac I could get. Not the professional, but the screen, big screen and everything, fully equipped. And now I can barely afford that. And back then I just could. Yeah. So the step went just down, because if you feel like you're not enough, you don't have enough, you're not strong enough, blah, 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 you will get less and less.
Yeah.
Right. But when you have this feeling of everything is possible, okay, now there's blink lights in front of my door. my dog is just checking out. Destructive. So having this mindset that money is coming to me because I do good with it. When I use money, I can grow, or the money grows. And when the money grows, I can do more, right? And I think that's when you have more positive mindset to it, to wealth, and probably also more potential when you grow up.
And
how many parents will actually go and just squeeze that thought? If their kid comes with something like that, like, no, money is not like that. How can you think? Yeah. You have to put money on the bank, and then you have, at least in Europe, in many countries, Switzerland, Denmark, I think you have negative interest. So if you put money too much, you pay. So they have your money. Plus you have, deflation of the money. So you lose big time putting money on the bank at the moment.
Exactly. If it's just sitting there in the bank, I mean, inflation is anywhere, 2-3% a year. And so your money is essentially losing value just sitting there. And so, that's why I told him, I was like, son, you're right. It does grow. And another way that it's like people is that it works, right? Just like daddy's about to go to work, that money is working for you. So all those little dollars are going out there working. They're looking for companies, they're looking for interest, they're gathering it. They're, all these. So, and he was like, what? Money works too. I was like, money works. And so that's why we have to invest it. So it was just an awesome little thing.
Yeah, but it is wisdom there, and I love it. So you say it's 2 months ago that you realized that, but you also say you have to have the environment, the safety, right? Kids need to feel safe. We, as grown-ups, need to feel safe. I mean, as I say, from depression to expression, it's about having depressions. It's about having traumas, all these things. When I read about it, when you listen to podcasts, webinars, whatever, it's always when you create a safe environment, people can let go of their traumas. They can really relive them and then look at them from a new perspective. And so it's also with the kids, right? As you say, when you have this safe environment for them, they can express themselves freely. When did you start, or did you realize you create that safe environment, or did you have to be conscious to create a safer environment over the last years?
I have to be conscious. It wasn't something that came naturally. I think what came naturally to me was to just have a very blanket standard. This is the way that we're doing this. Everybody has to fit into this thing, just so that we can move easily. What doesn't come naturally is having a different approach for each kid and each situation. Like, that's very painstaking. Takes a lot of time, takes a lot of energy, takes a lot of effort, and I didn't want to do that. But what I found is that this very strict blanket approach was suppressive, right, in some way. It wasn't, if things weren't being held to that kind of standard expectation, I would blow up. I would get upset. They would feel like they have disappointed me, or they couldn't live up. And, there was a lot of, yelling and fear and all these different things. And it just wasn't, helpful. And so I saw that I have to do the hard work of understanding each individual for who they are and allowing them to be that and supporting them in that. That is my job. And you know, it's not supposed to be easy, right? It's not supposed to be easy. And so, so yeah, I've had to be really conscious of that to the point where I have shared with them that my, I guess, parenting principle now is just based on four things. Is I'm not one that really care. Like if my kids go to college, that's great, but I feel like the whole college system is outdated. And for certain professions, it's important, but not for everything. It's just, to me, it's a waste of money. But what I've shared with them is that there's only four things that we need to commit to, that I'm going to commit to as your parent, and that I need you guys to commit to as my kids. Is number one, you're going to learn an instrument just to kind of get those creative juices and understand like the universal language of music. So you understand, you know, you play an instrument, play a team sport, so you have that athletic ability, and you're working on your body, you have that physical activity, and you also understand what it means to work with people, work in teams, work with a coach, work with a leader. So you got to play in a team sport. Number three is they have to learn how to code. They have to learn the digital language. Our world is a completely digital world, or we're moving to a completely digital world. So for you to be able to thrive and be successful in that world, you have to be able to speak that language. And so if you're able to develop code, develop software, develop things, and you know, in that way, you don't have to become a master at it, but at least have an understanding of what that technology language is, because that's the way of the world. And then finally, you have to figure out what your passion and what your strength is. And we're going to do everything that we can to jump into that. So if your passion is skateboarding, if your passion is ballerina dancing, if your passion is business and finances, whatever it is, we got to figure out what your passion and strength is so that we can put energy, time, resources into that. And so those are the four things that I commit to and the four things that I have them. And what that does is allows them to have some level of structure, but allows them to really live into and feel celebrated for who they are and how they're growing, and allows them to be well-rounded. So that's something that's just been recent, a recent intention for us and our family. Yeah, and obviously there's a sprinkling. I mean, we're Christians and we're spiritual folks, so we'll have, you know, a Christian foundation at the bottom of all of that, but those are the four kind of main things.
Yeah. What I realized with Christianity, there's so many different branches. So Protestant, Reform.
Luther, Protestant, okay.
Yeah, Protestant, cool. Yeah. Swiss. We had Calvin and we had Luther also kind of partially being in Switzerland. I mean, he was very German, cool. But so we had two of those.
Nice.
Probably Switzerland was like the safe ground for them to experiment.
Good middle country.
So, but how many, you know, you said you have these new four things. 2 months ago, this happened. How long is it ago that you realized that your parenting style is so wrong? Or your parenting style creates more friction because you do it like this is the way you parent kids?
At the top of the pandemic last year, when we were forced to all 2020. So January 2020, probably like March of 2020, was, and we all had to be home together. And I am forced to be around my kids and the family 24/7. That is when I saw that the way that I was doing it was not conducive for happiness and for growth and for thriving and for peace of mind, mental health, all of those things. So I would say that's when I realized. But then it's been a journey, right? So it's even in more recent times that I'm starting to really kind of formalize and trying to be more consistent in that new understanding. But yeah.
That's great. And for yourself, we talked on Sunday also about your own path. So, I mean, we can take it now here from, you know, you talk about what you learned also with your son, what he said, which will influence what you're doing with Mr. Meaningful Work. So how did that come to happen, that you started Mr. Meaningful Work, and why?
Oh, so what is it? Meaningful work.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is Mr. Meaningful Work? So, like I told you before, I'm a hustler. Like I'm always chasing new ideas. I'm trying to get businesses up and running. There's been a few tech startups that I've been a part of and trying to get off the ground. There's been some consulting firms and things that I've tried to get off the ground. And there's just always this drive to build and create something and be the founder, the CEO, have my own thing. And even when I had full-time jobs, right, I'd have a full-time job and also be tinkling and hustling with something on the side. And it would either be distracting or what have you. And so last year, I got a new job that moved us from Los Angeles in Southern California to Sacramento in Northern California. And so it was a new year. I mean, I started in January of 2020. We had to move the family. And so it was a new year, new job. And I just had this realization. I was like, okay, I'm starting another job. I need to find out why is it that I'm always getting pulled in all these different directions? Like, what is it that drives me to try to like pursue all these different businesses? Even when I have a stable job and income, is there something missing in what I'm currently doing? Is this something that I'm running for or looking for? Because it was actually affecting finances, like our family finances. It was affecting like relationship with my wife and the family. So I was seeing all of these negative effects, even though I thought I was doing what I loved or thought I was, doing what I valued by way of hustling, but it wasn't giving me the same energy and it was actually being more detrimental than positive. And so it was early on in the year that I was like, you know what? I want to find out what meaningful work is for myself. What is meaningful for me? What am I chasing? What am I missing? And I'm going to document that discovery. And that's going to be my hustle, is trying to figure out what meaningfulness is for myself. And so the idea for the name Mr. Meaningful Work came from a friend of mine. His name is also Tim, but he goes by Mr. Future of Work. And he talks a lot about like technology and innovation and just, the future of work. And so he took on the nomenclature of Mr. Future of Work. And so I thought, okay, if I'm going to be pursuing meaningful work, to hold myself accountable and to have that association, I'm just going to take on the moniker of Mr. Meaningful Work. So that anytime I introduce or I see the brand, folks will ask me about it and I'll be forced to have some type of response or thought. And so that's how it started. And so every week I would just record myself on a Monday saying, hey, what did I find meaningful in that week prior? So on Monday, I would say, last week I found so-so-and-so as meaningful work. This was what meaningful work looked like to me this last week. So I'll just document that every Monday and post that. And I call that Meaningful Mondays. And so that was, again, just my own documentation of that discovery. And then I started to, as opposed to just like reflecting for myself, I decided to start asking other people, what does meaningful work look like for you? And would have conversations on Instagram. And then eventually LinkedIn allowed me to get LinkedIn Live. And so I just formalized it into the podcast of the Mr. Meaningful Work Late Afternoon Show. And so it was just it was a combination of those two things, my own personal journey and discovery and documenting my reflections and then asking other people what their experiences have been. And what that turned into is that over, come January of next year, it'll be 2 years. Over the course of 2 years, I started to see themes, things that I experienced and things that other folks have experienced. Almost 40 interviews on my podcast and even more with the Instagram conversations. I'm starting to see themes of how folks were describing meaningfulness at work. And so then I took those themes and created what we call the Meaningful Work Matrix. that has the four P's of meaningful work and the kind of like two definitions of that. And so that's really what Mr. Meaningful Work is just creating content, creating training and education, engaging folks on how to discover as a leader that has a team, how do you create an environment where your people can experience meaningfulness in the work that they're doing? For individuals and team members, what are the things that you can do to influence meaningfulness in the work or discover aspects of meaningful work in the work that you're doing? And then even before you start working as a college student, as you're looking into the workforce, you know, what are some of the things that you can look for to make sure that you get into a role or get into a career or go down a path that allows you to experience meaningful work? So we just create content around those things. We're going to have a course. We're going to have a book. We're going to have, you know, some ongoing training and things around that. So that's the story and the current status of Mr. Meaningful Work. So it's been a great personal journey for me, and great to see some of the interactions and the lives that it's been affecting.
Yeah, that's 2 years, and it started just with you thinking like, okay, what am I doing? What is meaningful to me? And you just followed this inner voice, this belly feeling or whatever it was, heart feeling. But you also, when we talked on Sunday, you also said like, I ask you, you know, what is depression meaning to you? And, you know, and then you also said like, yeah, you think you might have been depressed at that stage, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it was, again, I think I didn't know how to name it and say, oh, that was depression. I was just in the feeling of feeling misunderstood, feeling unmotivated, feeling held back. Like there was just like this invisible hand that as I'm trying to progress either personally or professionally or in like my relationship or what have you, like in every bucket that you can have life, that there was this invisible hand just kind of like holding me and pushing me back and not allowing me to progress, not finding joy and an energy in the things that I thought would give me joy and energy. And so if that is depression, then yes, I was depressed, and I wasn't articulating it very well. I think we talked on Sunday about the recent rise in content in the media, in literature, on the importance of the focus on mental health, and how it's a real thing. It's not a taboo thing to talk about anxiety and depression, and all these things that people struggle with, that this is real, clinical, chemical things that are going on that require conversation, that require treatment, that require support. And so, again, because I didn't know what it was and I wasn't very good at articulating it, I was just kind of very insular about it and just kind of struggling within myself on that. But this has been a really, really great way to shine a light on it. I think depression is kind of, folks are in the dark and they're going through their stuff. Nobody really understands, nobody really gets, nobody's really there. But once you shine a light on it and you're able to like identify and like bring it out and have folks that are aligned in similar thought and mindset, it helps in the healing and the growing process. At least it did for me. And so that's been my experience.
Yeah, so searching for meaning every Monday for what happened the week before, you basically reprogrammed the way you looked at the world. You kind of focused more on, where did I find meaning? Was it kind of also gratitude journaling, like attitude of gratitude is what you hear a lot?
So I didn't do formalized gratitude journaling, but just kind of informally, what I started to find was that I was excited to figure out what I learned that week, right? So like at the end of the week, as I'm thinking about what to post for Monday, then I'm like searching through the week, like, oh, okay, so what was meaningful? And I'm excited to see like what part of my day or part of my week brought me energy, brought me joy, gave me learning. And I was grateful for that. Like, I was excited about that. And I looked forward to, so Mondays, the traditional thing of Mondays is like, Monday is the start of a week and the end of the weekend and the drudgery comes on. I'm pumped for Monday. Like, I am super grateful to have another opportunity to learn about myself, another opportunity to share that learning with other folks, an opportunity to connect and learn with other people. Grateful that my mind is still working to be able to remember, you know, what was going on. Yeah, I think it's very important. And I know, like, the research has it where when you document, you know, you write a gratitude journal, like what it does for your blood pressure, what it does or for like cancer risk and for like a heart disease and things like that. So that is a good practice, but it wasn't one that I was formally doing, just kind of informally in the meaningful work reflections.
Yeah. What do you mean with writing down? That's of course also a pitfall. It could also be, because if you just write it down and say, okay, now I did my 5 or 10 or however many you want to have, 3.
Yeah.
Gratitude, you can have a gratitude for yourself. Like, yeah, I'm grateful that I have all limbs. Okay, good. I'm grateful for the family life. Yeah, we are still married. I'm grateful I have a job. And you just write it down that way. It's not attitude of gratitude, right? So what you did, you embodied it.
Yeah.
And in the end, that's actually what makes it really strong. Yeah. It's the, when you write it down, you also need to feel it. And you really, the way you explained it, I mean, I could just feel it. Like, he was like, the whole body was vibrating in a different, you know, I mean, you could feel it, right? You were vibrating differently because you had this energy all in the body and you're like, okay, what did I do? Oh, that was great. That was great. That was great. Like, actually, the really meaningful thing I did was Monday, last Monday. Right. So you applied something there, and it's great how you found your way in that. And then, of course, if you start reading stuff, I mean, I don't know if we talked about Eckhart Tolle last time. I mean, he's like the Mr. Being in the present moment. Observe yourself. Okay. Observe the observer. Observe your mind. Because, you know, your mind and your being is not necessarily the same. It's a part of your body. It's part of your being human.
Interesting.
Because I'm like, wow. For me, it was like I wanted to kill myself 2 or 3 times. I definitely remember once. And I remember this thought inside myself. Why does one part of me want to kill while the other part just was working out, looking that I'm eating healthy? For me, that's an important part for the kids. Yeah. Not that my son is eating any vegetables. So that's a point which is aggravating me. Yeah. And I have to learn to let go because I know he would eat, but I think it's the pressure that we expect him to eat vegetables because I know he likes some of it. But anyway, so for me, it was this duality. Like, if one side, I'm trying to have a really healthy body so I can be 150 years old, if not, and strong and everything. And on the other hand, I just want to drive this car in this big truck, so I have no chance of survival.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like this duality. Yeah. And a year ago, I finally read Eckhart Tolle's book, and I listened to him before in German, which I think is not good for me. I don't like spirituality and personal stuff in German so much. Now it's better because I came over these triggers, right? These shadows. And but he talks about this, right?
Yeah.
Something in him said, kill yourself now. And he's like, who is talking? I don't want to live with you. Something like that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, who is talking to who here?
Right? Yeah.
Am I not one person? For him, that was a big awakening. He woke up a few hours later, completely sweaty. And then he went on the search. So it's like this, you know, being present in the moment kind of thing. And he also said, when you're really present with other people, you actually help them to heal. Because now you're really present. And we are not used to be present anymore with people.
Yeah.
Right. So just like this. So that's why I bring it up when I see you doing all these exercises, kind of like, you know, down the road, you might meet people which have done research, or you read books or podcasts, or people like me talking. You're like, wow, I did all these things. It just came from within. I just followed a certain feeling, and it's just one led to the other.
Yeah.
And that experience from this, what, how did you call it again? Meaningful Mondays.
Yeah.
Is that a part of your teachings you give to other companies? As you say, you talk about employers, employees, students, books, classes you want to do, courses. Is that influencing how you teach? Is that a part of the teaching?
Yeah, I think because I think documentation is critical. So one of the things that I thought about, you know, there's either the practice of writing out your gratitude. That's just documentation. Recording it on video is also documentation, right? If there's some way to document those instances or those events, it's powerful because then you can refer back to it. Then you know, so, you know, a point in time, you can see how you're growing, you know, from there on. So as we're talking to folks about the meaningful work matrix, and we're kind of leading them through the different principles, documentation is key. First of all, documenting where are the points that, you know, for the four P's, for example, where do you see permission, perfection, people, and purpose? Like, where do you see that in your current environment? All right, so you document that. What are the levels of those things for yourself and for the environment? And you document that. And then we just, you know, check back in a few months to see if that has progressed. Folks that are on higher levels of it, and they've documented that, yeah, I have high levels of permission in the work that I do. And some folks that have low levels of permission in the work, then they can kind of mentor each other. But you wouldn't know that unless there is that documentation. So then you have this collaboration and teach back based on that. So long answer to your question, yes, we definitely discussed the importance of documenting your journey and documenting where you are. What you're needing, right? It's also about articulating your need, what you're needing for to be able to experience that meaningfulness in the work that you're doing, and documenting what you got and what you're able to receive and how you've been able to improve.
Yeah, and then that's going back to what you said about the kids, right? So it's just feeding, it's a feedback loop there.
Yeah.
And actually learning to be authentic, and basically being authentic also means to say what you want and need.
Yeah.
And my daughter was also yesterday here, and she went climbing in the swimming pool. They have a climbing wall there.
Oh, nice.
And then she told me, why didn't you tell me what you wanted to do today? I'm like, okay, because I didn't want to overwhelm her. Right. But I told her I want to do for the podcast the logo. I didn't get there. I didn't get in the 3.5 hours I had with her. I didn't get there because then, you know, I had to clean up here, then making food, eating together, and all these small little things. So there were like a half an hour is nearly enough to start a computer and start to mingle around, right?
Yeah.
If you haven't used the software before. Yeah. But still, she said, like, why didn't you tell me? I'm like, interesting. Okay, I didn't communicate it. Okay.
Yeah. How old is she?
She's 10.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I'm finding out, especially in like the people. So we have the permission, perfection, people, and purpose. So in the people aspect, understanding how to build trust, how to present yourself as trustworthy, but also understanding the different communication styles for folks. One of the things that I've found out, especially for like in reaction with my wife, and interaction, even with my daughter, that I'm very used to communicating as little as possible, right? Just headlines, this is what you need to know. And if I don't feel like you need to know it, then I'm just gonna keep it to myself. Whereas my wife and my daughter, they want all of the information and they want the freedom to do with the information as they please. They'll either ignore it or compartmentalize it or use it or whatever, but they don't want to be left out of any information. So like my daughter, she's 4, and she'll ask me, Daddy, what'd you do today at work? And then I'll tell her, like, I had a few meetings, I had to create a PowerPoint. And she's like, what's a PowerPoint? And I'll tell her, it's like, it's a website, I'm trying to describe like what PowerPoint is. Yeah. And she's like, okay, so what'd you do in your meetings? I was like, well, I was talking about growth and strategy and da da da. Well, what's her? Like, she wants all the information, even though, like, what's she going to do with that? But for her, it's just the ability to communicate and know what's going on. Same thing with my wife. It's like, hey, just tell me what's going on, so that if anything moves, we can address it or whatever. We don't have any missing information. So there's no
secret or dark place which suddenly comes up because you forgot to tell her, and like, oh, you didn't tell me we should be aware of this and that, and suddenly it happens.
Exactly. And so some folks want that level of communication. Some folks are okay with just a high level. Just give me the bullets, give me, you know, what I need to know. And if it's unnecessary for what I'm doing, then leave it out. But being keenly aware or acute or attuned to what that is for different folks is sometimes a make or break in experiencing meaningfulness in that people aspect or in that relationship aspect, for sure.
Before we drift down into too much a business podcast, because then we can do a business podcast on the Oliver Schirra Show, startups, creativity, innovation. That's also what I studied. It's the thing now, because you said meaningfulness, right? And I think when you have meaning at work, right, for you, it brought you out of the depression. I don't think, perhaps you were clinically depressed, we don't know, because it didn't go to a doctor. But you can also just go through a bad phase. Of course, if it's over several years, then clinical depression is most likely the case. But that meaningfulness you had by doing the meaningful work stuff brought you out because you had something to look forward. And now you're teaching that. You're giving that further. What are the most important things you found out through these 2 years that people see meaning? And how do people react when they finally see meaning at work besides yourself? What do you see?
I mean, it's been a number of different things. I think if I was to pick on some key themes, is that it is two-sided. So one part of it is being able to impact other people's lives. Folks want to know that what they're doing matters to either somebody else or to a larger group or to the world as a whole. That's kind of like that purpose piece. The biggest theme that we've seen is that folks want to have positive impact on their world. And if that world is their family, if that world is their coworkers, if that world is their company, if that world is their country, they want to be able to see that they have positive impact. So that feeling of purpose, that I can do something that moves the needle forward in a positive way for my community, is that brings people out, right? When you are serving other folks, when you are, you know, call it mission work, call it, you know, purpose work or what have you, being in service to other people, having positive impact on other people in return heals yourself. Like it helps you out when you see somebody else thriving and they were thriving as a result of something that you have helped or you have contributed to. So, that's what we've seen. I've heard it from guests on my podcast. I've heard it from some of the folks that we have talked to. I did a training for administrators for private schools, like in their communities. And you know, when they are able to, you know, as leaders and administrators in their, you know, either K through 12, kindergarten to 12th grade, private schools, they might be deans, they might be principals, they might be, you know, what have you. When they have an appreciation for the meaningfulness of the work that they're doing in this kid's life, and that kid is going to impact that family, and that family is going to impact that community, like that just changes the perspective of whatever struggles that you're dealing with right now, you know, in the class or with, you know, the board or administration or what have you, knowing that, this community is going to benefit because of either this education or because of this initiative that we're doing or this program that we're offering that. That's one particular example for one particular group of folks. We've seen it in nursing staff as well. We're looking at like doing it in tech, and moving from there. But it's really about mission. It's really about purpose. It's really about how do we positively impact our community, or positively impact somebody else to find that healing.
Yeah, so that's like really what the big point is, the positive impact. And I can see that for myself. I've been really, really struggling because I want to give this positive feedback, and I just have this feeling people just do not take it serious. Mm. Right? They're just, oops, let me see if I have... Yeah, I have my sunlight shining in my eyes at 8:30 at 9. So this positive impact. And then I'm like, I come up with all these ideas and these different internships, and like, oh, you're just thinking too big and you're not creating anything. And one of the things I got, it's something I haven't been able to let go, honestly, is being told like, you know, Oliver, you have all these great ideas, but you're not finishing anything, right? So I also told you, like, I launched the podcast today. I said Monday, and then one of the guests which had the launch of the book said, you know what, it doesn't matter if it's one Monday or Wednesday. So this was the deadline, but somehow I procrastinated. Somehow the software I wanted to use didn't work. The songs are for my friend, which I can use. I cannot really... Yeah. Use as a layer for my intro and all these kind of things. I'm like, what is going on? Like all these like little things. And I'm like, you know what? So many people have told you, you think too much. You're not getting things done. You're just, you know, wasting time, blah, blah, blah. So I'm doing it actually.
Just implement, just get it out there.
Right. So get it out. And then I was told like, you know what? A job like a cleaning agent would be the best for you. So have a very structured day. So you go and clean, and you know, you're smiling with this big smile there. And for me, it's like, what the fuck, right? So, and I'm depressed and I'm on this internship. So I'm coming out of my depressed way and come back to the workforce. Yeah. And I try everything, if giving good ideas for the company, for this hub in that case, and other companies with what I'm good at. I'm like, you know, yes, you're in another instance, like you're really good with photographs and all these things and talking, but I want you to make these translations to German and English. And I want you to see, I kind of want to break your mindset, but I cannot. Mm. I'm like, why do you need to break my mindset? Why do we have one meeting a week, Monday morning at 8? Right. And I told him, I bring my kids at 8 o'clock, it's school start. So I come after. Yeah. Sometimes it takes a bit longer. So he knew, but he expected me to be there 7:45. Yeah. But if I bring my kids, then the kids have to be there at 7:30 to be sure that I make it. And he knew that. But, you know, it's kind of like breaking. And like, what's going on? Right. And you look at that, I'm like, I come with all these ideas where I'm naturally good, where I want to go in. Yes, I probably do not bring as much value yet because there's some skills missing.
Yeah.
But I'm not allowed.
No, it's tough. And, you know, that's, you know, work environments. And that's what we found is that the environments that allow for folks to share their ideas, share their opinions, and the very fact that you are bold enough to say, hey, this is my strength. Like, I know you're self-aware enough to know what your strength is.
At least at the moment.
At the moment, yeah. I mean, that's all you have is right now. You know what your strengths are at the moment. And then you're brave enough to bring it up and say, hey, this is what I'm good at. This is the opportunity that I see. How do we bring those two things together? The organizations that celebrate and create an environment for that. We track engagement through, you know, Gallup, and that's a factor of engagement. And so if you have that factor in there, I mean, the performance, the success of that organization is exponential. And when that is not there, then obviously what you see is the negative effects of, you know, high turnover, low retention, low resilience, burnout, you know, and all those different things. And so it's what we teach and train is that if you see that and said, okay, from a permission or perfection purpose, this organization or this team is scoring low. What are some of the things that I can do to influence that either in the organization or outside of the organization to build that up for myself so I can still get that sense of meaningfulness. And then on the back end, you know, if there's a way that we can train the leaders to say, hey, this is a very important factor for making sure that your team is resilient, that your team is engaged so that you can hit the goals that you want to hit. Because yeah, that is, you know, that would definitely drive somebody crazy. I can just imagine. Yeah.
No, but I just brought it up because this is also one part of probably my limiting beliefs or my trauma or whatever not, but we're still like in depression to expression. But I think we can kind of wrap it up. It's your early morning work time. And for me, sitting longer with my sunlight here, I'm going to be awake all night.
Yeah. It's getting late for you. Yeah.
I still have some paintings I want to do for the kids. It's Advent time. So that's nice. That's something I like. Last year we did like every second day, I made drawings for the kids for Advent.
Nice.
And so every
For what?
For the kids, Advent. What is it? How you call it? Advent time. It's like you have the calendar, the Christmas calendar from the first.
Oh, Christmas. December. Yeah.
From the 1st December to the 24th and the little doors. So every other day was drawings and in between was whatever, chocolates and stuff. Unfortunately, no apples and so on. The kids don't seem to enjoy that to open the gifts.
Yeah, so, they're getting older,
Yeah, so I try to make drawings again.
That's good.
But so we have touched upon depression, right? And we have touched upon, for you, Mr. Meaningful, and seeing that people which have this purpose and this, you know, impact, they are thriving, which basically helps them to feel better about themselves. And they get, you know, probably some people which are depressed suddenly get a better workspace because their bosses and the company realizes we have to change certain things.
Yeah.
Helps them to be better, or they find meaning outside. And, you know, because of what you said, subconsciously thinking of the church, right? Many people find meaning helping in the church in one or the other way, right?
Yeah.
Could be singing, cleaning, whatever, helping people. And then through that, feeling better in life.
Yep.
And the ripple effect of what it has. And you also brought up the teachers, the deans, whatever, in the school, which is stressed because her husband or his wife or whoever it is left them, or someone died and they feel really terrible. And suddenly get this picture how their impact on this one or two children can have such a positive impact on the whole community around it.
Correct.
Right. And then he or she also gets a better, you know, better life, because suddenly people come over with a piece of cake or they're invited for Thanksgiving or whatever. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Just because you're happy, grateful and nice to people and you can give compliments.
Yeah.
So now that's this part. So what is for you? We talked about authenticity. What happens when you're really authentic and really true to yourself? How are you standing in life according to where you are now with your knowledge?
Me personally?
What, you personally or generally? When you think, like, if someone steps up and finds out, oh, I'm like this person today, perhaps, right? It can change from day to day, like with the kids. But now I'm authentic. So how will this person present or be around? I mean, you can take it from your side. How would you?
I think you just get, I mean, authenticity gives you, I mean, true authenticity gives you, I think, two things, clarity and confidence. Right? You have clarity and confidence when you're able to be that full authentic self. Clarity because you know what you're going to take, you know what you're not going to take. You know what opportunities are going to come to you, what opportunities you're going to say no to. So it gives you that clarity when you know, hey, my values are connections and relationships. So you'll recognize if a relationship is very fake and superficial. Like, you have that clarity and you're like, you know what? I don't want any parts of that. You get that clarity. And it shows up in so many different ways as well. And confidence, right? Where you're able to just move in an air, in a posture of boldness. You are, you know, sure of where you are. You're sure of your position. You're not second guessing. You're not second guessing yourself. You know that if you're in a room and they're talking about the thing that you're confident in, that you're supposed to be in that room, or that you can add value, you know, to that particular thing. And then when folks start, you know, folks' opinions and things like that aren't going to affect you as much because you're fully confident in what your strength is. If somebody ever tells me that I am a crappy storyteller, like, it doesn't affect me, right? Because I know for myself, like, I'm a phenomenal storyteller. So, you know, your opinion of, you know, what a good storyteller or a bad storyteller, like, that's not going to break me. That's not going to break me down because I have that confidence. If somebody tells me you're a bad salesman, it's like, that's not going to affect me. Like, I know I'm great at sales. Like, I know how to close deals and go down the business development pipeline. And so, you know, when you're not affected in those ways, it just helps you to be more productive. It helps you to be more focused. And again, it provides that clarity. So I think those are the two things that come with being your full authentic self is confidence and clarity.
Yeah. And by that, exactly, you express yourself in a more exactly confident and clear way, yeah, because you know where to go and
yeah.
And you're sure, bold enough, right? You have this. No more fear. So you're able to walk through life with less fear.
Exactly. You're fearless. You're fearless. Yeah. Yeah.
In the beginning, less fear. And then eventually when you're completely in yourself, you're completely fearless.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, did I forget anything to ask beside that? Because I think this is a really nice closing for this theme. Did I forget anything we touched on or anything else you would like to share?
No, I just think, you know, we just have to appreciate the fact that it is a journey, right? That it is not a quick fix. It's not a quick turnaround when we're talking about depression to, you know, expression or being able to move out of that, that it is a journey and one has to appreciate every part of the journey, right? Yeah, I didn't want to. If I could have avoided yelling at my kids, if I could have avoided making my kids fearful or what have you, I would have, but it needed to happen for me to be able to say, hey, this way isn't working. Would I have rather not been, you know, feeling suppressed or pushed down and like kind of work through that and losing money and fighting with the wife all the time and all those things and feeling misunderstood and all that stuff. I was like, yeah, I would have preferred not to have happened, but you now have an appreciation. Like you had to go through that and say the words, right? And feel the feelings and think the thoughts and have the conversations so that when you're on the outside of it or on the next side of it, if somebody says similar words, you recognize those words. If somebody has similar feelings, you are empathetic with those feelings. If somebody is having certain thoughts, you can almost read their mind because you have also had those thoughts. And so it is important to go through that journey and not hope for just a quick fix, because a quick fix will shortchange you, in my opinion, and discount how much you can help other people if you can't say the words, think the thoughts, or feel the feelings that the process allows you to.
Yeah. And I can see your journey for the last 2 years has actually, at least from the outside, I do not know you from before, right? So I don't know how you worked before, but opened you up to actually be of more service with your meaningful work. You chose the right name here, Mr. Meaningful Work, right? You really help others.
That's
to shine,
that's the hope.
Yeah, but that's beautiful. I love it, and I'm so glad that we made it work. And I've realized that you sent me some video messages on LinkedIn. I'm like, how the fuck does he do that? He couldn't find the option.
I appreciate you. It's just, I mean, I just started doing that. I looked at all the different options for sending. It was like, yo, let me do something different and send send a video to say hi to folks. Oliver, really, I really appreciate you reaching out. I really appreciate you shining a light on this. And it's a very vulnerable thing, I think, to be able to talk about one's journey in depression and struggle and how they're trying to come out of it. It's not an easy conversation to have for it to be the focus. And so I appreciate you doing this, and I appreciate you inviting me into this conversation and to learn from you as well. So thank you. And I just wish you the best of luck and huge success, and that this will help people. Folks will hear this and feel like they've been heard, feel like they're understood, feel like there is a way out, there's a path forward to be able to express themselves, even if they might feel like they're in a depressed state. So kudos to you, man. You're doing good work.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, it just comes up what you said. Having meaning in life is helping, actually.
Yeah.
To step forward. But sure. With that, I say, we cannot just stop like that. Where can people reach out to you? I mean, we talked about Mr. Meaningful Work all the time, so I hope by now they...
Yeah, it's very easy. Yeah, you just go to MrMeaningfulWork.com. Go to MrMeaningfulWork.com and you can follow me on social media. I'm very, very active on LinkedIn. So if you want to get the most up-to-date content, just follow Tim, Mr. Meaningful Work on LinkedIn. On Twitter, I'm not as active, but sometimes Instagram as well. All Mr. Meaningful Work on all those channels too. So I'd be happy to sign up for our mailing list at MrMeaningfulWork.com. And we have some groups and some announcements that are coming out as well. So
awesome. Yeah, with that, we have packed it in now, so we can close this talk and say thank you for the listeners. And I hope you enjoyed it. Please leave your reviews, messages, whatever. You can send them to me. You have all the links on the show notes. And I'm looking forward to having more meaningful talks.
Absolutely. Good deal. Thank you, brother.
Bye.